Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a end zone punt. Wilson intercepted.
Touchdown, Zion.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk, taking your calls for the next 1 hour, talking some NFL and New York Giants football. 201-939-4513. That's your telephone number to be a part of the program. Or you can go to Twitter and put your messages on hashtag Giants Chat, and we can talk there and converse about not only the Giants, but everything that happened in the playoffs this weekend. And every year, this is by far my favorite weekend of the NFL playoffs, and really of the NFL season. You have the eight best teams remaining. You usually get four pretty good football games, and this weekend certainly did not disappoint. And I'll take the games in the order in which they were played, and ironically, that means we probably got what was the best game of the weekend coming up first. The Patriots and the Ravens, were the early game on Saturday, and in a game that I thought the Patriots would win by a couple of scores, the Ravens came out and played an excellent football game. And Joe Flacco, quite frankly, continues to play far better football in the playoffs than he does in the regular season. I wish I had a good explanation for you as to why that's the case. It just seems to be something that he does and something that he's good at. So give him a lot of credit. But the difference in this game in the end, I think, were some clever calls by Bill Belichick. You had the two great play calls. One, the little receiver, I guess lateral option pass, you would call it, where Julian Edelman hit Danny Amendola with that spiral over the shoulder for the touchdown. That was a game-changing play. You had the ineligible/eligible receiver play that they ran earlier with the offensive lineman/tight end coming off that line of scrimmage and catching the pass from Tom Brady. So I thought all of those were great play calls by Bill Belichick. I thought it was interesting in the second half of that game that the Patriots abandoned their run and really just decided to throw the football all day, and it worked. That Ravens defense, in the end, was overmatched. They've kind of been a young mismatch group the whole year. They'd come together a little bit towards the end of the season, but eventually taking on a top-notch quarterback like Tom Brady with a number of weapons, whether it's Rob Gronkowski or Julian Edelman or Danny Amendola, they met Brandon LaFell. The Patriots put it together, and the Ravens defense really had no answer for the Patriots passing attack. The only way Baltimore was going to slow down Tom Brady and the Patriots offense in that game was if they got consistent pressure on the quarterback with their two edge rushers, Terrell Suggs and Elvis Dubreville. And they were not able to do that, especially in the second half. Tom Brady had a lot of time, and he was able to get it done. The Pats' defense, to me, was very unimpressive. For a Ravens offense that really has had its struggles all year long, the Patriots' defense got singed a little bit. Darrelle Revis, especially in that first half, struggled a little bit. He got called for that big defensive pass interference penalty, which, frankly, I'm not sure was a good call. He got beat on that slant route by Steve Smith at the end zone, and boy, you know, he's ageless, and he's a heck of a player, Steve Smith. Anybody who want that guy on your football team is tough as nails, and he goes out there and gives it 100% every time he goes out there. Love him as a football player. But that Patriots defense, which to me had been the difference for that team so far this year, really putting them over the top, maybe their best defense since 2007, they did not play well against the Ravens. They'll need to play better next week against Andrew Luck if they want to make it to the Super Bowl. But I thought the Patriots were the better team, and they move on. The Ravens, they go home. But give John Harbaugh, Joe Flacco, and his team a lot of credit. I thought they played above their talent level, and that's all you can ask for in a situation like that. I think the Patriots were the better team, but the Ravens put together a great game. They led by 14 points on two different occasions, once in the first half, once in the second half. But Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, they know how to win. They stayed with it. They stayed with their game plan, and they won the football game. The late game on Saturday, easily the worst game. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it here. The Seahawks, to me, still not all that impressive, especially offensively. If you can slow down Marshawn Lynch, you know, Paul Richardson now out with the torn ACL, but even with him, that passing offense to me is not very impressive. Russell Wilson does a lot of his damage on broken plays. Now, he's an accurate passer, but he's not a guy that's going to sit in there and make four or five reads from the pocket and throw pinpoint passes in the small spaces. No, that's not what he's going to do. Does he make accurate throws? Yes, but that passing game to me is still not very impressive. They don't have game-breaking wide receivers or tight ends. So I think the Seahawks are still vulnerable, my opinion. But boy, their defense looks like the defense that they had last season. Cam Chancellor played out of his mind. Earl Thomas, obviously, his running partner back there, is a great player. Richard Sherman continues to play well. They're stopping the run with Bobby Wagner and that rotating defensive line up front. And the Seahawks defense right now is hitting on all cylinders. And it's going to be a heck of a matchup next week with the Green Bay Packers. Now, I went out of my way last week to say how poorly I thought Cam Newton played in week one of the playoffs. So I have to go back on that and give him his props. I thought he played pretty well against the Seahawks on Saturday night. I thought for the most part he was accurate. Did he make some mistakes? Sure. That throw near the goal line that was picked off by Chancellor for the touchdown, that all but ended the game, was late. Bad throw, bad decision. But for the most part, I thought Newton played well in this game. I really did. I thought it was a good step for him in his advancement as a quarterback. I thought he stayed in the pocket. He made good reads. He went through his progressions. He played like an NFL quarterback has to play to succeed. I thought Cam Newton played a pretty good game. Now, the big game that everyone's talking about, obviously, from the weekend is the Cowboys and Packer game from Sunday at 1 o'clock. And I'll get right to the meat of the issue here because I know this is what a lot of people have been talking about. The Dez Bryant catch that wasn't. And here's the thing, folks. It might have been ruled a catch on the field, but it was never a catch. I was watching the game with a couple of Cowboy fans. As soon as he made the catch at the one-yard line, they started going bananas. They got all excited, rightfully so. I said, guys, be careful. This is going to get overturned. Don't get too excited. He said, John, what are you talking about? This is before McCarthy even challenged the play. And I said, the ball came out at the end. He has to maintain control throughout hitting the ground. It's not going to be a catch. The replay showed exactly what I thought it did. He caught the ball up top, went down, didn't make a football move common to the game. The ball came out, incomplete pass. Now, here's why it was incomplete. The rulebook states if a player, as he's making the catch, is going to the ground, and Dez Bryant was going to the ground the entire time. He caught the ball up top. On the way down, he took a few, he took two, three steps. I get that. But they were all on his way to the ground falling down. He has to maintain control. Now, I get it. He thought he had control. He did have control. He was reaching for the goal line with one arm. And from Dez Bryant's perspective, I'd be annoyed. I'd say, look, I know I had possession. That's why I reached out with one hand to try to score the touchdown. And I get his argument. But by rule, since he was falling down the moment he had control of the ball, he has to maintain throughout the entire play. And he didn't do that. The ball hit the ground. It came loose. It popped up. Incomplete pass. Incomplete pass. Incomplete pass. And I do hope this puts to bed all the ridiculous conspiracy theories that people are talking about from last week with the Lions game, where the NFL had it in the bag and they wanted the Cowboys to advance. Well, how'd that look this week? You might not like the call sometimes, folks, but the refs do the best job they can. And according to the rule on the books, that was the right call. I know a lot of people like to say, well, it's a bad rule. Well, you know what? It's not a bad rule, and here's why. You have to have a consistent wording in the rule book so that those type of plays are called the same way from game to game. I know people say, well, no, if it looks like a catch, it's a catch. Well, let me ask you this. For as much as you guys complain about officials and hate the refereeing in this league, do you really want these individual referees making judgment calls based on what they quote-unquote thinks looks like a catch on a week-in, week-out basis? Is that what you want? You want individual judgment calls. Do you like in Major League Baseball how all these umpires have their own strike zones? Does that work out well too? Do you really want these guys making their own judgments as to whether or not these catches are made? That's a recipe for disaster. And the rule has to stand the way it does. You have to call possession to the end of the play. If you want to make the rule possession 2 feet down, that's possession. Well, you know what? You're going to have a ton of fumbles now. Because how many times over the course of the year, everybody, do you see a receiver come down with the ball, get 2 feet down briefly, get hit by a safety or a defensive back, and it's called an incomplete pass because he didn't secure possession for long enough. That happens in every single game. Every single game. Every single game. Those are incomplete passes, and rightly so, because he didn't possess the ball long enough to have the football. Those shouldn't be fumbles. And that's why the rule has to be consistent across the board. And much like with the Lions last week, the Cowboys had plenty of times to win this game on their own. And by the way, I want to say this too. Sam Shields, great play, kind of knocking the ball out of Dez's hands up top on that play. No one's talked about that. Great play by Sam Shields. That made the catch even harder. He doesn't do that. Bryant might control that ball throughout the process of the catch. But like I was saying, Dallas had a ton of opportunities to win this game even without that play at the end, okay? Plenty of times. End of the first half, they commit a false start on a field goal opportunity. Then Dan Bailey misses it for 51. By the way, after missing the kick after that false start on the play before. Then they allow that deep pass to Randall Cobb to set up the Packers field goal. Could have been 17-7 at halftime. Instead, it was 14-10. Big difference. That's a six-point swing. And by the way, I thought the refs got the call wrong on that pass play after the Cowboys missed field goal on the reverse angle. It looked like the ball hit the ground on the catch. On the ground, they called that a catch. I thought that was incomplete. Anyway, second half. DeMarco Murray has the football, runs through the defensive line. Daylight. It's a touchdown. Julius Peppers reaches around the block and just taps the football, comes loose. DeMarco Murray's had fumble issues the first half of the year. He solved them the second half of the season. He's one of the Cowboys' best players. He can't fumble in that spot. That's 7 points. And without the mess at the end of the first half, the Cowboys could have been up in that game 24-7. And you know what? The game's probably over at that point. The Packers fumbled on a special teams play. The Cowboys didn't recover the ball. But at the same time, the Cowboys missed opportunities. The Packers took advantage of theirs. Aaron Rodgers was great on third down most of the game, especially in the second half. And after missing some throws in half number one, Rodgers was on the money in half number two. He threw some balls into some really tight windows, something he doesn't usually like to do. With his mobility compromised, he hung in the pocket, and he made some excellent throws into small spots. And I thought he played a heck of a game in the second half, so give Aaron Rodgers credit for that. And they'll take on the Seahawks next week, which should be a very fun ball game. Finally, Broncos and Colts, the late game on Sunday. I should touch on that before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. Quite frankly, Peyton Manning didn't play well. And you guys know what a Peyton defender I am. I think he's a great player, but he played poorly. Now, Adam Schefter reporting today that Peyton Manning has played a month with a torn quad. That's something I mentioned last week. I thought his leg injury is worse than people let on, and it looks like that's the case. With his neck injury, he does limited arm strength, so he needs his legs to get power into the football. But you know what? Here's the bottom line. He's on the field. He played with the injury, and I'm going to judge him on his performance, and he played poorly. The Colts played some good defense. Their secondary played some tight man-to-man. But in that first half, Peyton Manning had plenty of opportunities to get the ball down the field, down the sideline for some big plays. He overthrew Demaryius Thomas. He overthrew Emmanuel Sanders. Demaryius Thomas dropped a couple of screen passes. The Colts stopped the run well. The Broncos couldn't run the football. Their offense, quite frankly, to use a George Steinbrenner quote, spit the bit. I never thought the Broncos would be held to 10 points by that Colts defense, which is not good. It's not good. The Broncos defense couldn't get after a Colts offensive line that has struggled all year long. Where was Von Miller? Where was DeMarcus Ware? Where was the pressure on Andrew Luck? It wasn't there. Give the Colts credit, but I thought the Broncos played a terrible game. And now the Colts, who have a great quarterback, who, by the way, takes a ton of chances, and is a little reckless with the fumble, to be quite honest with you. He reminds me a lot of the way Tony Romo played when he first came into the league and was kind of just playing, you know, without throwing caution to the wind and just throwing the ball up there a little bit. I thought that was very interesting, the way Luck really took some chances in that game. But it didn't bite him in the butt in this game. We'll see if it bites him in the butt against the Patriots next week as the Colts advance to New England, which, quite frankly, you know, I think New England will probably win that game by a couple of scores, but that's just me. 201-939-4513. Eyes for the Giants. The search for a defensive coordinator continues as the Giants look around the league. More guys obviously become available to talk to now that the divisional round of the playoffs is over. We could talk about that. We could talk about anything else you want to talk about. I actually don't have my notes in front of me, but I did sit down. I kind of took notes on all the free agents that are going to be available, but we could talk about that later on in the week. Lance Medel with us tomorrow, Paul Dottino later in the week, as we get the ball rolling on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513. Let's get to it. I got four people on the line ready to talk some football. Charles in New Mexico is up first. Charles, what's going on, pal? How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
What's going on, Charles? How are you, man?
I'm good. Hey, I think it was a great call on the Dez Bryant, and being here in New Mexico, let me just tell you, I'm president of the Dallas Haters Club here, this morning at the gym, there was no paraphernalia, so it was great.
Hey, look, Charles, bottom line, look, I'm not rooting for or against anybody here. The bottom line is, look, and I said it last week, I didn't think that was defensive pass interference on Anthony Hitchens. Now, the way the referees handled it was poor, but I didn't think he committed a penalty, so I had no problem with the flag being picked up. But this week, according to the rules, and it's called consistently like that all year long, that's an incomplete pass. Bottom line, there's no argument about it.
Yeah, I was listening to Mike and Mike, and they had the head of the referees on there, and he explained it totally, so Cowboy fans can cry. I was telling one of them this morning, you know, Dez is a free agent. He could be a number three receiver on our team next year, you know, if we wanted to pick him up.
Oh, Charles, relax.
I know.
Relax.
I'm just giving him a hard time. Hey, but as far as defensive coordinator goes, I know we interviewed Morris. Is there Steve Spagnuolo coming into town?
There was a report by Paul Schwartz that they were going to request permission to interview it. The Giants don't comment on any of these interviews, Charles, so I can't really throw out any names for you. All I can tell you is that the New York Post is reporting, and Paul Schwartz did report that the Giants asked for permission to talk to Spag. So we'll see if anything comes of that.
And then I heard Marinelli of the Cowboys is blasting to the Bucks. Have you heard or confirmed anything?
Yeah, you know what? Pro Football Talk kind of mentioned that yesterday, and there were rumors about that the last couple of weeks. I find it strange that Marinelli would leave a team like Dallas that obviously is, you know, pretty poised to make another, you know, playoff run next year. I don't think they're going to lose a ton of their key guys. I think Dez Bryant will return. I think DeMarco Murray will probably return too. To go to a team like the Bucks, who aren't very good, and quite frankly, what are the Bucks going to do with Leslie Frazier? You know, he's a pretty accomplished defensive coordinator. They're going to fire Leslie Frazier, who's tight with Lovie Smith, to hire Rod Marinelli. How are they going to handle that transition? It just seems like a very odd thing to me that Marinelli would go there and they'd fire Leslie Frazier. What did Leslie Frazier do wrong? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I understand that. But relieved here in New Mexico, Perry Fuel's out. Let's get somebody in there. And let's draft a linebacker, John. And great call yesterday on your Twitter. You know, the DB for the Packers did a great job defending that ball.
He did.
That was part of the reason he went down, and the ball hit the ground and did come out.
No question about it. Charles, thanks for the call, my friend.
All right.
Appreciate it. And, I think that Shields' portion of that play has been very much underreported and not talked about enough. He went up there. He made a great play on the ball, folks. He really did. He made an unbelievable play on the ball. It was really, really impressive. And the ball kind of came loose up there, went down to Bryant's shoulder pad. He regained control of it, but that probably forced him into that awkward fall, which the ball finally did, in fact, come loose. And again, right call on the field by the rule. And if you don't like the rule, I want you to call up. I want you to tell me what you think the rule should be. Because you need a hard and fast rule here that you're consistent from game to game. You don't want these refs making judgment calls. So if you want to change the rule, you hate the rule, you got to give me a new rule. What is it going to be? 201-939-4513. Emilio's in Staten Island. Emilio, what's going on?
How you been? Long time no speak.
Emilio, how are you, man?
All right. The reason that it was overturned is when he was coming down, he hit the ball and loosened it.
Yep.
That's why when you come down and hit the ground, you have to maintain possession. Not because he lost it when he hit the ground.
No, well, the reason he has to maintain possession throughout the catch is because according to the rules, Emilio, if while you're making the catch, you're on your way to the ground, you must maintain control of the football throughout the process of hitting the ground. So whether or not the Packer hit the ball or not, he still has to maintain control of that football as he hits the ground. Since he was falling down the entire time and there was no football move between the catch and him falling down, it was all one act, he has to maintain control throughout the entire catch.
All right, well, forget Cowboys. Let's talk about a little bit.
What do you got?
Yeah. What do you think we're going to go with this ninth pick?
I think the Giants right now, and I think it's a lesson you can learn from this playoff weekend too, Emilio. If you want to win football games in this league, you got to be able to win up front on offense and on defense. You got to protect your quarterback. You got to run the ball. You got to stop the run. And you got to get to the opponent's quarterback. And I think the Giants need to improve in all those areas this year. I know they had 48 sacks last year, which is fourth in the league, but I don't think it was quite as consistent from game to game as the team would have liked, and Jerry Reese said as much in his postseason press conference a couple of weeks ago. And I think up front on either side is where their focus needs to be in getting better this offseason.
Well, it also coincided with them playing some of these youngsters a little bit the last few weeks of the season, too.
No, it did. That had something to do with
it.
And frankly,
when it started.
And frankly, JPP just started playing better, too.
And
he played better.
JPP playing better, the combination of the two, that's when the sacks started coming.
Well, I mean, JPP got a couple of sacks. I guess Devon Kennard got a couple of sacks. Kerry Wynn got a couple of sacks. I see where you're coming from with that. I would caution, you know, putting a lot of stock into a couple of those Kennard sacks because he was really just unblocked on a couple of those blitzes. Demontre Moore has to become a two-way player if he wants to get more snaps. You know, I want to see Kerry Wynn do this a little more consistently. I agree.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yep. I think Wynn, you know, he played pretty decent.
Who, Kerry Wynn you're talking about now, or Demontre Moore?
Yeah. No, Wynn.
No, look, Wynn has shown promise. He just has to go out there and do it more consistently. Now, anybody can make a couple of plays now, and I try to say this about everybody, and I said this about Beckham when he first started too. Anybody can make a couple of plays here and there. Being able to do it consistently after opponents have you on film, that's what separates the bit players from the really good players in this league.
Really good players. Yeah, but Beckham is just on another planet.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
He's just a whole different discussion.
Thanks, Emilio.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, appreciate it, bud. 201-939-4513. And look, this actually, from what I've been reading, and I did start doing my draft prep over the weekend a little bit. Still hesitate to talk about names because we haven't even had the Senior Bowl yet. But it is a heavy defensive line draft in this draft, what I can tell. Right now, looking at some of the big boards online, you know, there could be 10 defensive linemen going in the first round of this draft. And 5 in the top 10. From what I'm seeing in a lot of these, you know, big boards and mock drafts and stuff like that. So this is going to be a heavy defensive line draft. So the Giants could have an opportunity to get somebody in that spot when they pick at number 9. The big offensive lineman from Iowa, who I think could be a very good guard or right tackle in this league from what I'm reading about him. He could very well be there at number 9. So the Giants will have the ability to help themselves up front in one way, shape, or form when they pick in this year's draft. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Joe in Pennsylvania is up next. Joe, what's going on?
Hi, John. There, were you looking there? I agree, too. I said I want an impact player on defense or the offensive line, but like I said, is there another Beckham there? You know what I mean? Somebody rated up there so high that the Giants would jump for them again?
Well, I mean, look, you have the receiver from Alabama that's obviously a very good player. I don't think any running backs will go in the top 10, in my opinion. I just don't think people value that position anymore. I don't think the Giants can go out there and take another receiver. And look, I know there's no guarantee Victor Cruz comes back and plays the way he did. But let me say this. Even without Victor Cruz the second half of the year, and I know it was against some competition and some defenses that weren't that great. The Rams were a good defense, by the way. The other teams maybe had some issues, and I get that. I thought the offense had enough weapons with Beckham, you know, Larry Donnell, if you run the ball a little bit better. I think you have to forego getting the weapon. You got the weapon in the first round last year. I think you got to make sure you get better up front on both sides in this draft. I think you have to start rebuilding that foundation up front. And look, you started with Weston Richburg. You started with Justin Pugh. You started with JPP and, you know, Jonathan Hankins. I think you have to continue to build that as you move forward.
I agree, John. Hey, John, how old's Walton, the center the Giants picked up last year?
J.D. Walton, I believe, is around 28 years old. I will double-check that right now, but I believe J.D. Walton's around 28.
I have to disagree with Len where he said if our center that we drafted ain't starting there. I mean, if Walton's doing one hell of a job, I mean, he's still a young guy, and if he's our next best player to play at guard, the guy we drafted last year, I have to disagree with him there.
J.D. Walton will be, Joe, J.D. Walton will be 28 in March. Right now he is 27. And look, I think what the Giants will do is that they're going to give J.D. Walton and Weston Richburg a chance to compete. And whichever player is better, that's the player that's going to play. And look, if they don't add another guard and they believe whoever loses that battle is the next best guard up, then yeah, that player is going to play guard. I think you're right.
I, I have to disagree with Len there, right, saying, because I remember him saying a day or so ago that it was a total whatever miscue. Did Dallas get a gift that first drive there on a defensive interference in the end zone, John?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think that was defensive pass interference. Watching it live, I did, because it looked like the Packer defensive back hooked him up top a little bit, but then on the replay, it showed that the hook really didn't take place, but I understood
right
what the referee was looking for. But on that same play, quite frankly, or the following play, Clay Matthews hit Tony Romo low and late. That should have been called a penalty. So there were some missed calls.
But I'm just saying Dallas got another gift there. So, I mean, there's so many plays, but that was obvious. In the New England game.
Well, but Joe, keep in mind, too, there was also that play at the end of the first half where I thought the ball clearly hit the ground for the Packers when they were going for that field goal, and they went to the replay. The reverse angle showed the ball hit the ground, and they still called it a catch. So there were calls both ways in that game.
Right, and like I said, in the New England game, it's a shame. I just want the refs to be consistent. They almost bear-hugged Gronkowski, their number one tight end, across the end, wrestled him to the ground. And then Revis got a couple little bump fouls. I didn't think they were fair in there. But also in that game, I seen where you said they threw that option pass. I hope the Giants have that in with Beckham, the way he can throw that ball, you know, down in to put a receiver out there, you know, where he has the option if Eli to lateral or to throw the pass to him, you know, the option or the pass where he can either throw it or run it, because he can sure throw the ball, and you know what I mean. I think, you know, teams will be drawing up on him, so I hope the Giants have that in there too. That's about all.
Thanks,
done.
Joe. Appreciate it. And look,
thank you.
The Giants obviously have Beckham throwing the ball in their playbook. They ran that play on that end-around option. I don't know if they have the, you know, lateral backwards pass option in there. I can't speak to that, but they do obviously have faith in Beckham throwing the football. And one other call I want to bring up that vexed me a little bit, and I still haven't seen a good enough explanation for my taste, and I like to think I'm pretty, you know, in-depth on all these rules. I think I have a pretty good understanding on them. On the Josh Cribbs punt return non-fumble, it's called the fumble on the field, on replay, they showed it hit the ground. I've heard Dean Blandino, the head of officiating, talk about this a couple times. Now, I heard him say this morning on Sirius NFL Radio that on the field, it was called a catch and a fumble. Once the ball hit the ground, since it was ruled a catch and a fumble on the field, the ground cannot cause a fumble, so that's why it stayed Colts football. And Blandino said the only thing you could rule in that situation is that it was a muff, and he never had control of the punt to begin with, which I thought was the case. Now, he said on review, you can't change it from a fumble to a muff. I didn't know that. I also don't know what constitutes possession when you catch a punt. Is it the same rules you have for a wide receiver, or is it simply having the ball and having 2 feet on the ground? Does that constitute control when you're catching a punt? So I think the NFL needs to clarify that rule a little bit as to what clarifies control when you're catching a punt as opposed to if you're a receiver catching a pass. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and say what's up to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's going on, man?
Hey, John. How you guys doing, man? How you
doing great,
today?
Drew. How are you, pal?
Great, great. Hey, man, I didn't see any of the games this weekend per se. I saw bits and pieces. I was on the road between D.C. and New York to see my brother. But so I didn't see a lot of games, but I did see bits and pieces. First and foremost, you know, overall arching, I will say justice prevailed with regards to Dallas, because personally I feel like they shouldn't have been playing this week due to the flag last week. And I know you could say that it wasn't pass interference, and I'll agree with you, but it was face guarding, and I think that's also
face guarding is not a penalty in the NFL, though, Drew. Face guarding is only a penalty in college. Face guarding is not a penalty in the NFL.
Well, if you don't allow the receiver to catch the ball, they'll call a penalty. I thought it was still face guarding, but whatever the penalty was, it wasn't pass interference. But yeah, if you don't allow the receiver to catch a ball, if the receiver's running down the field and the defender doesn't turn around to look at the ball to try to catch the ball, there's a penalty on that. I thought it was face guarding.
Only if there's enough contact to prevent the catch. Anyway, I don't want to relitigate last week, Drew. Let's move forward.
My point is this. Again, I feel like justice prevailed and that in the end, Dallas should not have been in there. That said, watching the game yesterday, my take on it is I do agree. I do feel like Dez did make a football move. I felt, and it's not too many people talking about it, but I felt like you could almost call the fumble on that ball when he got rid of the ball, because I was looking at it. Let's say if Dez was in the middle of the field, for example, and he does the same thing. He catches that ball, he turns around, he makes a couple of steps, and then he goes down and the ball comes out and the other team picks that ball up. More than likely, they may wind up calling a fumble
on
that.
Yeah, but Drew, the problem you have with that is that Dez Bryant, from when he got control of the ball up top, as soon as his feet hit the ground, he was falling down. Dez Bryant never had his balance and was just running. He was always down. And if you catch the ball and you go right into the process of falling down, according to the rule, you have to maintain control throughout. And there was never a point during that catch where he wasn't falling down to the ground. And that's why he has to maintain control.
Okay, and I'm not going to argue with you about the letter of the rule, because personally I agree with you 1,000% on the letter of the rule. I just felt like, and again, trust me, first and foremost, I wanted Dallas to lose, and I ain't feeling sorry for them, because, again, I feel like they got over last week. That's my take. I'm going to stick with it. They got over last week. That said, I didn't see, and I watched it play a couple of times, I did not see where Dez Bryant was losing the ball before he went down. Dez Bryant lost that ball after he hit the ground. But at any rate, you know, again, like you said, we're not going to spend all day on that argument. With regards to all the things, I'm just going to give you my take. I really wanted New England, because my other hate team is New England. I can't stand New England. In fact, I'd almost rather see Dallas win than New England. But going back, what I'm looking at, I say next week, you know, this is just my prediction. Next week, I'm going to go with the Seahawks. I really don't think. I mean, I hear what you're saying with regards to Russell Wilson and the offense, but I really don't think Green Bay's got probably enough to deal with that defense and everything.
Well, I think the problem, Drew, is that the Cowboys' pass rush in the second half was non-existent, and that allowed Aaron Rodgers to have the success that he had without having his ability to move. I'm not sure he's going to be able to sit in the pocket like that all day against Seattle next week. I don't think that's going to work.
Agree. And I was going to say, and on top of that, a gimpy Rodgers. So yeah. I agree with that. With regards to New England and the Colts, personally, the Colts shouldn't have never even been in the game. And I do agree, Peyton had a horrendous game once again. And I watched some of the highlights last night when I got home. And, Peyton was just missing a lot of his balls. Now, yeah, he might have had injuries or whatever, but like you said, he was on the field, so
no
there
question.
You go. But that's not going to happen next week with Brady and boys. And I'm going to tell you flat out right now, I am picking New England to win that game. But, John, I'm going to tell you right now, I would love to call you back and say I was wrong on New England.
Hey, look, Drew, here's the bottom line. But much like you, I have no love for the Patriots, but I really think that they're the best team in the league this year, and I think they're going to be Super Bowl champions. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I'll say that they're going to go to Super Bowl, but please, and for my Super Bowl pick, I will tell you right now, I do have the Seahawks. That's who I have winning. But again, I will tell you that's probably more wishful thinking than anything else. However, because you know, while I do trust the Seahawks' defense. Yeah, you're right about the offense. That's the only thing that kind of concerns me about the Seahawks. Is Russell Wilson in the offense. So, but please, let somebody beat New England. But, yeah, with regards to New England Colts, I don't see any competition there.
Thank you, Drew.
All right, later.
Appreciate it, man. Good to hear from you. Shakes in Baltimore is next at 201-939-4513. Shakes, what's up, pal?
What's going on, Johnny?
Long time no speak, my man. How you been?
I know, man. I was waiting to talk to you this week, man.
All right, what do you got? Let's go.
All right, I got a couple questions, but first I wanted to say some things before I ask you these questions.
Yeah.
All right. You know me. I'm already on my draft process, Johnny. I've been there since we lost to the Cowboys. So I've been a little flip-flop you know, of course, in this process, the kids ain't declared. Everybody didn't declare yet, all the underclassmen and all that. But a name I need you to look out for, because I really like this kid. Do you remember how it was about Ogletree a couple years ago when I started calling?
Yep,
in?
I do. And by the way, I should point this out too. Your man Brian Stork, who you did call out a lot this past year, was starting for a playoff team this week. So I have to give you some props for that one too.
Oh, no doubt, man. I was going to bring it up, but I'm glad you did. I was definitely right on that kid.
Nah,
I did
you're
like
on
him.
It.
I was really high on him. I knew that he was going to be a starting center. But I'll tell you what, I like Richburg better than I like Stork.
There
How
you
about
go.
That?
I like that.
All right, what I was going to say was, like I said, I loved Ogletree coming out the draft a couple years ago. Well, I'm 10 times infatuated with this kid, Shaq Thompson, from Washington. This guy is athletic. He's one of those new generation linebackers that I was telling y'all a couple years ago with Ogletree and the guy that came from Kansas State, Brown, Arthur Brown. That's what the league is going to, man. I'm telling you, this kid is nice. You got to look at him. He played running back, everything. Man. This guy's crazy. But knock on him, he don't really know how to shed blocks that much. I mean, I can't say he don't know how to, but he kind of struggles there.
Well, you know, and the other thing Shakes I would say, he's just 230 pounds, and I think that probably goes into his inability to shed blocks. He probably doesn't have the strength to do it, exactly.
Yeah. I like the kid that you was mentioning, Scherf.
Yeah.
From Iowa, tackle. He's a nasty dude. If you want nastiness on your offensive line, that's who you want. Kind of struggles in pass protection, though, so watch out for that. All right, now my question is this, though. I was looking at safety play yesterday from Chancellor, from Thomas, Earl Thomas, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, we need safety play like that on the Giants. And I like the kid Landon Collins out of Alabama, too, so – look out for him, too.
And Landon Collins might actually be a top-10 pick at safety. We haven't had one of those, I don't think, since the Earl Thomas-Eric Berry draft. So
exactly.
So he could be a top-10 safety.
Exactly. That kid is nice. But what do we do with Antrell Rowe? Because I think he's going to ask for too much money. That's one of my questions is, what do we do with Rowe?
Well, honestly, Shakes, I don't know what he's going to ask for. You know, I do know that, you know, he wants to be back. He said that. I think he loves it here. I think he likes playing for the organization. I think he likes playing for Coach. I know Coach loves him. I think the organization is a fan of Antrell Rowe. So I think both sides would like for him to get back here. But let me put it this way. I think last year, both sides would have liked to see Justin Tuck back here too, and they couldn't meet well with the financials. So depending on where Rowe and the team come in money-wise, I think that's the only thing that's keeping them apart. I think both sides would like for him to be here, but at the right price. We'll see what the difference in opinion is between player and team when it comes to the price. That's always the trick.
And I wanted to say this. I'm really high on Shaq Thompson going in the first round. Because I think that we can get a good defensive lineman in the later rounds. Because like you said earlier, man, this is a deep draft for defensive lineman.
Though I will say this, Shakes, if you want a premier pass rusher, you generally have to pick those guys early. Those guys don't hang around a long time in these drafts.
I get you. My last question to you is, I'm very high on Spags. a lot of my compadres on the show, you know, we had a lot of debates about this guy. I like him because of his aggressiveness. My question is, what do you feel about Spags, and would you welcome him back?
I think Spags did a great job as a defensive coordinator when he was here. Obviously, he's right now under contract with the Ravens, so you know the Giants would have to ask for permission and you know to even talk to him at all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the reports are that they did. The Giants haven't confirmed that. They don't make comments on any of this stuff, Shake, so it's very difficult for me to, you know, talk about what names they're talking to because the Giants don't officially announce that stuff, so I can't really talk about it because the Giants haven't announced it. Now, Paul Schwartz said that the Giants plan to ask for permission. We'll see if that actually is the case and whether or not that goes down. What I will say about Spagnuolo is that when he was here, he did a good job, but he had great personnel. And he had great individual pass rushers. You know, he left here. He didn't have that same talent. His defense struggled a little bit from time to time. So, much like any defensive coordinator, I think you have to have the talent in order to succeed. And I think, let me put it this way. If Spags has the right talent, he can be a good defensive coordinator. And I think that's the best way you look at it, and you can't ask for much more than that.
Okay.
Fair
all
enough.
Right, well, fair enough, man. I love Spags. I would welcome him back with open arms. I like Pepper Johnson too. So either two of those guys, I'm very happy.
All right.
Thanks for taking my call, John. I'm gonna speak to you sometime more this weekend. This week.
Don't be a stranger, my friend.
I won't.
Thanks, Shakes. Appreciate it.
All right.
Back to the phone. Let's go to Brian in Virginia. Brian, you're up next. What's up?
How you doing, John?
Doing well, Brian. What's going on?
Good. Okay, I got a couple of questions.
Yeah, bring it.
Or a comment first. One, I don't think Roller's going to ask for too much money. And even if he does, you can't just dial up that type of leadership. I think the Giants should do what they can to keep
Well, Brian, here's the bigger issue, too. I mean, you got to bring in – look, you can let Burhe and Cooper Taylor compete for a safety spot. But I think to go into next season relying on one of them to be good enough to be your starting safety, I think is a little risky. I think you got to bring in two safeties here that you believe you know can start in this league. So if you can get a role, if you can get a role here at a good price, I think that'll make it easier to fill that second safety spot as well.
I agree, absolutely. Second thing is I agree with your comment about the O-line. You got the Giants have to draft time of possession basically. They really do have to beef up that O-line even more, just like following what the Cowboys have done and what the Seahawks have done. So my question is, is O-line looking stronger in free agency or in the draft, or can we not tell yet?
I looked at some of the offensive linemen in free agency. There aren't a ton of names. Mike Iapati, who's a big offensive guard for the 49ers, one of the guards that are out there. I don't have my list. I made this big list over the weekend. I forgot to bring it into the room for the show. I can go through more of the names tomorrow if you like. But Iapati's a guy that's out there. There are a couple big-time tackles out there. But I don't think the Giants are going to go out there and spend big-time money on a tackle. They already did that with Wobedi, and he had a pretty good year last year. There are some interior offensive linemen that are out there. There aren't a ton of offensive linemen from what I've seen on these early draft boards, and again, this is not my analysis, I'm just going by what I'm reading on the internet, that they don't seem to be a ton of offensive linemen here that are looking like they're going to go in the first round or in the top 15. Only the one kid out of Iowa right now seems to project in that area. So if they're going to go offensive line, they could probably get an interior guy in the second round that they like. From what I can tell, though, this draft is very, very heavy defensive line-wise, and I think that's right now, much like last year's wide receiver, and you saw good wide receivers all the way into the third round, I think that's what you're looking at with the defensive line this year.
Yeah, unfortunately. I would just like to see more O-line there. One last question.
Yeah.
And this is about the defensive coordinator spot. And, nostalgia tells you, Pepper Johnson would be a great fit and so on. But my question about him is, in the 14 or so years that he's been with New England and I think another franchise, they haven't looked to push him to be a DC. So my question is, why is that? And, what do you think about that?
I think that's a great question. From the outside looking in, without interviewing him and knowing all the facts, would you consider that a red flag and something you have to look into and find out why? I think there's no doubt about it. Now, there could be a great reason as to why, and then it wouldn't necessarily be a significant situation, but I'm sure that's something the Giants are looking into. But I think that's a very good question, and I wish I had a better answer for you.
No, it's fine.
All right, thanks, Brian.
Thanks.
Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. And I think that's one of the reasons Pepper decided to move on to Buffalo, to be quite honest with you. It's because he wasn't elevated to that defensive coordinator spot in New England. They ended up giving it to somebody else, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he had called some defensive plays for him before, and he was named the defensive coordinator this year, and the name escapes me, and I can't think of the damn guy's name. Maybe one of you guys can help me out on Twitter with that. 201-939-4513. Rolando is in Queens. I haven't spoken to Ro in a while. What's going on, Rolando?
Hey, how you doing, Big Johnny?
Doing what's great, Ro. What's up, pal?
Suffering the basketball season that hasn't started. Oh, it did start. I forgot.
Dude, it started and it's already over for the Knicks.
No kidding. You know what's a bad thing, though, Johnny? You lose so many games and it's not guaranteed that you're going to get older for.
No, it is not. And you know what? Here's the way I look at it from a Knicks fan perspective. I'll be very quick here, I promise. Phil Jackson has fallen into some great luck during his career. He fell into Michael Jordan. He fell into Shaq. He fell into Kobe. And I think it's about time some of that good Phil Jackson luck rubbed off on the New York Knicks and they get the first overall pick in the draft. And that's all I'll say.
I wish. I tried all last week to get on the radio show, and I'm going to just review it from Monday on. Just give me a minute. Monday was offensive line. I think we need an offensive guard. When you look at the Pro Football Focus, you see that our interior linemen were all negatives in terms of running, plus the tight end.
That's true.
On Tuesday, it was defensive linemen, and I think we need a defensive left tackle to go along for the to complete our line, because I think we're beginning to assemble somewhat of a line defensively if we can get JPP, and that's another issue I want to talk about later. Wednesday was about fuel. It's about moving on, and I agree with the choice. I believe in Spags for the fact of his pedigree that his mentor was Johnson with New England, with the Eagles, and he had always these exotic blitz schemes that he has. That's what makes him so aggressive, and that's something I think we can take on now, even if we don't have the personnel per se to do it. But he can disguise it enough that we can put pressure on the opposing team.
Now, Rolando, just remember this, too, really quickly, that Spags defense can sometimes be hard for teams to figure out. Remember, it took the Giants 2 full regular season games in 2007, get up about 1,000 yards and 75 points in the first 2 weeks before they got going against the Redskins in week number 3.
I give you that, John, but I just think given the way the game is playing more now today, more it's all passing. You can't. We want to stop the run, and we're just vulnerable because our middle stinks. Our defensive tackle and middle linebacker and safety play stinks. Plus the outside, not Kennard, the opposite side of Kennard. Okay, I know McClain had a lot of tackles, but you got to consider what those tackles on the line of scrimmage or negative, or were they just after the guy ran 5 yards. Okay, now on Thursday. The issue was whether we should play a 3-4 or 4-3. I believe in the 4-3 for the fact that we have too many young personnel kids just coming on. You're beginning to see glimpse of DeMontre Moore. You're seeing Hankins. You don't know whether you have the rebirth of JPP that, I can talk about him all day, man, and I think I'm going to mention him now for the fact that we're at a crossroads similar to where we were with Beatty. And Beatty and Eli had a rebound year, and I it's just a shame that the fans don't see the same thing, that they keep crucifying the poor kid, and he had a rebound year. That we don't have to worry about our left tackle position, and we don't have to worry about quarterback. Back to JPP, it's similar to the fact that JPP and Beatty had similar kind of years right before their contract, or their contract year, they showed the arrow going up. And we had to make that signing hoping that we had that future star. And that's where we're at right now. Do we let go and he prospers somewhere else, or do we sign him and he becomes what he were 2 years ago? And that's where I'm at a crossroad. Another thing about Collins, which I call you way early in the season from Alabama,
yeah,
that I agree with Shakes. One of the things that he does very well is special teams, and that's something that is a big thing with Tom Coughlin. And I think that going with him in the first round, there's no problem. And I followed the draft right after the end of the draft. And there's a couple of good offensive linemen, and it's true, it's defensive, it's really strong, defensively. Mm-hmm. But there's a few good offensive guards. But I'm afraid of putting in the rookie with a first-year man where it's a direct line to Eli. Okay? And I'd rather have a veteran. And you mentioned the guy from San Francisco. You got Carpenter from Seattle. You got the guy from Cincinnati, offensive guard, James Carpenter from Seattle, Clinton Bolin, I forgot his last name.
Orlando Franklin's another guy from Denver that is a free agent this year, too.
What's his name?
Orlando Franklin.
Oh, yeah, no. Bro, he's a penalty to happen. Yesterday, he almost started a riot. Did you see that? That his offense, his running back, the poor kid had to push him, and they almost got into it on the field. Orlando, I grant you, but I think that's I don't think that's Giants football. I like the aggressiveness. There's
all right, Ro, finish up, man.
That's it, bro. That's it. Thank you for taking my phone call, and I'll be talking to you guys soon.
I appreciate it, Rolando. I appreciate it, man.
Bro.
Thank you, man.
Bye-bye.
Hey, look, and I think what you know, we're so eloquent on the JPP stuff is true. You have to figure out, you know, what you're going to get out of him moving forward. You know, and, you know, is it the inconsistency the first half of the year, or is it the playmaker in the second half of the year, which, you know, which Jerry Reese talked about a couple weeks ago? You know, which guy are you going to get for a full 16 games? Are you going to get the JPP from 2011, or are you going to get the JPP from 2012 or 2013? You know, people say, well, he's healthy the second half of the year. Well, can he stay healthy? Can he go a full year without being banged up and being injured? Defensive line's a tough position. You get banged up. It happens to everybody. You got to play hurt. You got to play well hurt. And that's something Justin Tuck always used to talk about. So that is the critical issue moving forward, JPP, when the Giants have to make a decision. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Kashawn in Maryland next. Kashawn, what's going on?
Hi, John. How you doing?
Doing well. By the way, Matt Patricia, thank you for my boys on Twitter and Greg here for getting that name for me, defensive coordinator for the Pats. What's up, Kashawn?
Hey. Okay, I just want to know, how can we get better? You know, I am completely enamored with the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, I don't care what kind of fan you are. You have to admit what they have accomplished. 9 AFC championship appearances. That is absolutely amazing. I mean, and I can't even tell you who are the receivers for the Patriots outside of Rob Gronkowski.
Well, Kashawn, I'm not sure.
They're so good.
I'm not sure it's fair to put the Seahawks in the same category as the Patriots just yet. Let's see them sustain it for as long as New England has before
right.
we start
well,
putting
just,
them in the
I
same category.
I just mean, as far as the what amazes me about the Seahawks is their defense. I mean, their defense is just disgusting.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I mean, they're just so good.
It's fantastic.
And I don't know. I just... That whole, what Pete Carroll did with all those draft picks who, I remember when he picked some of those guys, especially like the Bruce Irvings and everything, they criticized all his draft picks, and then all those guys are like balling right now. And a lot of those guys that he has on his team are late round draft picks. What he was able to do in USC, and then he transferred that to the NFL, Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, I mean, that's just a fun organization to watch. And as a Giants fan, I'm really jealous. I'm really jealous. And I think that if I'm the owner and I'm Jerry Reese, you need to look at those two organizations and really see, like, well, you know what, how can we become a more consistent ball club? Because, I mean, we have to get better in the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And that's primarily why I think we need to draft defense. I want an impact player on defense in the first round. And I do, and I agree with you. Like, last year I was all, you know, playmaker. This year I'm all about the trenches. And so I don't believe we have to go O-line in the first, maybe a linebacker or a defensive end or a safety, some kind of player like that in the first round. But then in the second round, I do think that we should go O-line in both because we have to stop the run. The Cowboys are back. You know, they're going to be competitive year in and year out. We all know what the Eagles can do. So we have to beat those teams. I feel confident that we continue to beat up on the Redskins, but we need to at least learn how to split again with Dallas and Philly if we're going to try to contend for a playoff spot. And so our whole concern needs to be getting better in the trenches. But I disagree with you, Drew. I don't know how you could ever root for Dallas over New England. That's just crazy to me. But, I mean, I just completely admire what New England has done, and I'm completely enamored with the Seahawks. So that's all I had to say. Just your points on that, and what do you think? Why is it that the Giants – what do we need to do to be more of a consistent football team? Because I want to contend for a playoff every single year. Thanks for taking my call, John.
Hey, thank you, Kashawn. And I think what you need to do is get that consistent core in here and do some of the – thanks for the call, Sean. I appreciate it. And do the fundamental things year in, year out, and maintain that consistent play. Now, I think what happened with the Giants is that some players got old, and, you know, the guys that went in and replaced them didn't continue that quality of play. The Patriots, and trust me, this is not easy. And no other team in the league has been able to do this. So if there's a secret, no one else has been able to figure it out either. I don't have the magic answer for how you do it either. But the Patriots are able to cycle through players, and frankly, cycle through them fairly quickly, year to year, and just continue with a fairly high quality of play. Now, a lot of that has to do with Tom Brady. A lot of that has to do with Bill Belichick. You got, you know, a great coach and a great quarterback. It can cover up a lot of warts. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, they've been trying to get this defense back to where it was for a good 6-7 years now. And that's why, frankly, they haven't won a Super Bowl in the last 7-8 years, because their defense hasn't been what it was when Tom Brady was a young quarterback. The funny thing about Tom Brady, folks, is that he actually won his Super Bowls when he wasn't playing as well as he did later on. I mean, Tom Brady between 2007 and 2013 played much better than Tom Brady between 2002 and 2006. Much better. Much better player, much better quarterback. But the Patriots didn't win since 07, but they won 3 times before then. Well, why? The defense was great. So while the Patriots have been able to stay afloat in a playoff team and in a lot of AFC Championship games for all those years, and they deserve credit for that, they haven't done everything great because their defense has never been brought back to where it needs to be to win a Super Bowl. And I think that's where they are now, to be quite honest with you. I think the defense, despite the fact they didn't play that well this week, has gotten back to the point where they are Super Bowl caliber. So, Keyshawn, I don't know what the formula is. I think a lot of it is how the coaching staff and the front office work in conjunction to get the type of players that they need to win and succeed. I think there's great communication there, and I think Bill Belichick has a big hand in the personnel, which is a good thing. But they have struggled on defense a little bit, and that's why they haven't won the last few years. Final call of the show is Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's going on?
Hey, John. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Chuckles, how are you?
All right, let me give you a rundown on the New England Patriots, how they do it.
All right, what do you got?
First of all, they cheat. Second of all, they're in their weakest division, they can win every year, so they only end up playing 2 games.
Yeah, they have not had another good quarterback in division to go against Tom Brady since probably, what's the last really good quarterback that was in that division, Charlie?
Jim Kelly.
You say Jim Kelly, and I laugh, but is that far from the truth? What, Dan Marino in the late 90s?
Yeah.
I mean, geez, you know what? The last guy was probably Vinny Testaverde when he quarterbacked the Jets in the early 2000s, late 90s. That was probably the last guy.
That's right.
That's
and
crazy.
The other point is, it's the Vinatieri curse. As soon as they cut him, they haven't won another Super Bowl.
And, you know, Charlie, the funny thing, too, Charlie, people talk about drafts and everything. The Patriots have cut a ton of high draft picks. They've had second-round busts, third-round busts, first-round busts. They've had a lot of bad draft picks, but they've been able to overcome that somehow. It really is amazing.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's my take on them.
Okay.
And the thing, I just go along with Shakes. I love Spags. Actually, he was the linebacker coach for the University of Maine in 1993. And in 1994, he was the defensive coordinator for the University of Maine. And so there's a Maine connection there. So and the other thing that I read an article about some of his ex-players, OC and some others, and he said that this guy could adopt and adapt. If he was doing something in a game plan saw that it wasn't working, he would change it up right there, draw up a new play, go totally away from what he thought was going to work, and he would do something else. Like in the Super Bowl, they were supposed to be blitzing from the weak side, and the linebackers, and they weren't getting there. Right then, he changed it up, and he started blitzing from the other side, which they hadn't practiced all week, and it worked, and they got it done. Mitchell ended up, sacking Brady.
Now, Charlie, real quick, I agree with you, and I read that same thing you did, but the key there, too, is to have players capable of making those type of midstream adjustments as well.
Right, but that's one thing Fuel could never do. He stuck to whatever he was doing, and he never changed it up. And that's why I think Spags would be great. He'll be able to change things up. He'll be able to look and gain preparation during the game. He can change things and see what's going on. And that's what we need in a coach, and I think Spags would be great for that. So that's all I got to say, John. Oh, about the play. Everyone's talking about that missed catch that, Bryant had. Like, they're talking like there was, 15 seconds left in the game. There was only 3 minutes.
Yeah, and quite frankly, honestly,
Aaron Rodgers was cut as a pistol. He would have drove down, and all they needed was a field goal to win the game anyway.
Yeah, you know what, Charlie? That is a great point, and I should have brought that up earlier. The Cowboys' defense would have had to have gotten a stop, and if they didn't get a 2-point conversion there, they would have had to held the Packers from scoring completely. If they would have gotten the 2-point conversion, a field goal would have tied, a touchdown still would have won it. So odds are the Packers do come down and score there anyway, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, like they did. They ran out the clock.
I agree with you.
They went right down the field.
That's fair.
And they you know? So anyway, thanks, John. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate it. Great job on the phones, guy. Great job on Twitter. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for being a part of the show. Lance joins me tomorrow on Giants.com as we continue talking NFL and New York Giants football. We'll see you then.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, on the field. He's got through. 35,
30. Get no punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.